if the Democrats really score a landslide victory, it will show very clearly that the public is in support of the movement despite recent violence.
Voters peacefully cast ballots in Hong Kong. It's Monday, November 25th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, revealing Beijing strategies in Xinjiang. A long time away from home for some Afghans. Impeachment hearings, Democrats debate, and growing a new cash crop. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Hong Kongers voted in record numbers Sunday and avoided anticipated clashes during a local election that is widely seen as a de facto referendum on months of pro-democracy protests. Hong Kongers are choosing more than 400 members of 18 district councils scattered across the tiny territory. Voters formed long lines that snaked around city blocks outside polling stations across the territory, many waiting over an hour to vote in local elections that are usually viewed as relatively inconsequential. District council members who are being elected by Hong Kong voters have no power to pass legislation, but the election is the first chance for residents to vote since a wave of anti-government protests erupted in June, creating bitter divides in Hong Kong society. The district councils essentially serve as advisory bodies for local decisions, such as building roads or schools. As of early Sunday evening, voter turnout appeared to be on pace to double that of the previous district council election in 2015, that according to government figures. It also easily exceeded the previous record turnout set during 2016 legislative council elections. Pro-democracy forces are hoping for a big win, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Hong Kong.
This is Hong Kong's first election since anti-government protests began 5 months ago. If long lines outside polling stations are any indication, many Hong Kongers are eager to express their opinion. This voter, Mr. Ma, says he sees the elections as an extension of the protest movement. He says he wants to see a big change. Another voter, Ms. Kwok, says local political offices have been dominated by pro-establishment candidates for years. She says she wants more Democrats in office. Voters are electing district council members, which actually don't have much power. The outcome, though, will be seen as an important measure of public opinion. Ma Kwok is a political scientist at the Chinese University of Hong Kong.
If the Democrats really score a landslide victory, it will show very clearly that the public is in support of the movement despite recent violence.
Hong Kong has seen intense clashes between police and groups of mostly student protesters. It's an escalation in the five-month-old anti-government protest movement. Despite the violence, many polls suggest the protests remain popular, while Chief Executive Carrie Lam has record low approval ratings. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Under Hong Kong's quasi-democratic system, district councils have little power, but the vote could affect how the territory's more influential legislative council and chief executive are selected in the future. Hong Kong has seen 5 months of pro-democracy protests. The protests initially took the form of massive demonstrations against the reviled extradition bill, which could have resulted in Hong Kongers being tried in China's politicized court system. The protests have escalated in recent weeks with smaller groups of hardcore protesters destroying public infrastructure, defacing symbols of state power, and clashing with police. Protesters defend the moves as an appropriate reaction to police violence and the government's refusal to meet their demands. Despite the protester violence, polls suggest the movement still enjoys widespread public support. Meanwhile, approval of Hong Kong's Beijing-friendly chief executive Carrie Lam has fallen in polling to a record low of about 20%. Many Hong Kongers are concerned about what they see as an erosion of the one country, two systems policy that Beijing has used to govern Hong Kong since it was returned by Britain in 1997. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now at voanews.com. On edge from violence, Hong Kong holds local elections. Measles epidemic erupts in Samoa. At Nagasaki Ground Zero, Pope calls for abolishing nuclear weapons. U.S. security advisor decries world silence on China camps. Trump non-committal about signing Hong Kong pro-democracy bills. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. And of course, there's always the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The internal workings of a vast chain of Chinese internment camps used to detain at least 1 million people from the nation's Muslim minorities are laid out in leaked Communist Party documents that were published Sunday. According to one, The Guardian, one of the news organizations which the information was leaked to, a cache of classified government papers appear to provide the first official glimpse into the structure, daily life, and ideological framework behind centers in northwestern Xinjiang region that have provoked international condemnation. Obtained by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, the documents have been independently assessed by experts who have concluded they're authentic. China said they had been fabricated. President Donald Trump's new national security advisor is criticizing what he says is silence from the rest of the world over China's confinement of more than 1 million Muslims in re-education camps, linking the lack of a global outcry to China's economic clout. On Saturday, before the latest information was publicized, U.S. National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien met with journalists and was interviewed by a moderator at the Halifax International Security Forum. He said what is happening in Xinjiang will have an even greater worldwide effect.
We're in, 2019, and we've got over 1 million people in concentration camps in Xinjiang. I mean, that's an outrage. And that's an outrage that I don't think the world is properly expressing. It's something the United States has been at the forefront of. And President Xi is the president of China. President Xi has, the power of writ in China. What he says goes. And those camps should be closed. They should be dismantled. But it's not just the camps. It's the surveillance infrastructure that's been built in the region, tracking people through facial recognition, AI, through electronic means. They've created an entire surveillance state in that province. That's beta. That's going to roll out to all of China. It's starting to do so already. And by the way, it's something that's going to happen worldwide. I mean, the social credit scores aren't just for China. When Huawei becomes the backbone of the internet for any liberal democracy, it's not just that you're going to lose your security, your sense of security information to the Chinese. All of your citizens are going to have their most private personal data exploited. Medical records, banking records, social media. Everything about a person is going to be sucked up, through the cloud, and using AI, the Chinese are going to have incredible insights into individuals in any of your countries, our countries, in which Huawei is the backbone. That's a terrifying situation. So, the situation in Western China is terrible. Anyone who's been to Yad Vashem, anyone who's been to the Genocide Museum in Kigali, all the times we say never again, and I'm not suggesting that people are being liquidated there, but the fact that there are re-education camps in a modern country holding over 1 million people is an outrage. And, I think the United States is outraged by it. I think other countries are, but I think because of the commercial weight of China and because of the desire for trade relationships and other economic relationships with China, that the criticism of what's going on there is being muted. And it's especially surprising in the Islamic States. I mean, the fact that the Organization of Islamic Conference, I think, only had one vote against China at the UN on this resolution, speaks volumes about how the world is turning turning away from a terrible humanitarian crisis.
China has denied committing abuses in the centers and has described them as schools aimed at providing employable skills and combating extremism. O'Brien is the fourth person in 2 years to hold the job of U.S. National Security Advisor. Happening now in Asia, 22 people have died from measles in Samoa. All the deaths except one were of children younger than 5 years old, according to Reuters. The South Pacific island has declared a state of emergency amid nearly 2,000 cases of measles and has initiated a mandatory vaccination program. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. 40 years of conflict in Afghanistan has forced millions of refugees to neighboring countries, mostly Pakistan and Iran. Their lives over four decades have reflected the ups and downs of regional politics. 40 years later, the lives of many of them are still uncertain, full of challenges. VOA's Aisha Tanzim visited one refugee community in Pakistan's largest city, Karachi. This is their story.
The children know the sprawling low-income housing complex as home, ignorant of the uncertainty that surrounds their lives. Their parents, refugees from Afghanistan, have spent decades in Pakistan. Some were born here. Others came as toddlers. Their escape from war came at the cost of stability. After the warm welcome of the 1980s, during the Soviet-Afghan war, things became unpredictable.
Caught between two neighbors, not always friendly to each other, the lives of these refugees are largely hostage to the roller coaster of a relationship between Islamabad and Kabul and the ever-changing policies of various administrations.
When the bilateral relations are bad, as they were 5 years ago, life becomes miserable.
Police used to harass us relentlessly. They would raid our houses at night. Almost 600,000 to 800,000 people left for Afghanistan in 2014 and 15. Some of them sold their businesses at throwaway prices, left much of their wealth behind.
When things improve, like they did in 2017, the raids and harassment end. Earning a living becomes easier. Living with such ambiguity is not a choice. Many feel they have no option.
Afghanistan is great, but it's at war. There's Taliban and no work. Everyone is sitting at home, nothing to eat. Things are really bad.
Some who visited Afghanistan for brief periods returned with tales of violence and chaos.
There was a lot of firing. I got really scared. I'd never seen such a thing. Taliban came inside our house, so I took my aunt and grandparents and came to Pakistan.
Despite the ups and downs in official attitude, most refugees say that the people of Pakistan have always made them feel welcome. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Karachi.
In Afghanistan, more than three dozen people are reported dead in a series of security-related incidents, including a fatal attack on a UN vehicle in the capital, Kabul. Several of the dead were civilians. Afghan officials said Sunday that Taliban rebels assaulted a security outpost overnight, killing eight soldiers and wounding four others. Senior provincial authorities claim the ensuing firefight also killed at least 20 assailants, although the Taliban disputed those claims. Civilians continue to bear the brunt of the Afghan war. The United Nations has documented around 2,600 Afghan civilian deaths in the first 9 months of 2019, while more than 5,600 were injured. Coming up, we get up to date on U.S. impeachment hearings. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Pope Francis spoke to Catholics in Hiroshima and Nagasaki Sunday as part of his four-day tour of Japan, preaching an anti-nuclear message. The 82-year-old Argentine has said it's been long his dream to visit Japan and had longed to be sent there as a missionary more than 50 years ago. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, U.S. House Democrats' public impeachment inquiry hearings provided new details on allegations President Donald Trump pushed Ukrainian President Zelensky to investigate domestic political rival Joe Biden and his son. But as lawmakers draft the articles of impeachment for an expected vote before the end of the year, Republicans and Democrats remain deeply split over impeachment. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports on where the impeachment inquiry heads next.
Do you swear or affirm?
12 witnesses in 5 days. Public impeachment hearings provided firsthand testimony from witnesses on Trump's July 25th phone call with Zelensky.
It is improper for the President of the United States to demand a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen and a political opponent.
Witnesses told lawmakers that the president's personal lawyer, Rudolph Giuliani, pressed for Ukrainian officials to announce an investigation.
We all understood that if we refused to work with Mr. Giuliani, we would lose a very important opportunity to cement relations between the United States and Ukraine. So we followed the president's orders.
But none of the witnesses directly linked Giuliani's demands to Trump. White House concerns about corruption delayed the release of the aid, Republicans argue.
I think the president had more confidence in the change of government inside Ukraine, that it had been voted on in the past. He wanted to be reassured that there were changes made.
The hearings proved Trump committed the impeachable offense of abusing the power of his office, Speaker Pelosi said.
And when we see a violation of the Constitution, we have no choice but to act. And the evidence is clear that the president has used his office for his own personal gain. And in doing so, undermined the national security of the United States by withholding military assistance to the Ukraine to the benefit of the Russians, that he has undermined the integrity of our elections by what he has done.
The timeline for an impeachment vote in the U.S. House still unclear. House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler will have to take over the investigation from House Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff to write the articles of impeachment. And Democrats still face the challenge of convincing the American public.
Probably not. Probably most actions are hard to understand as an impeachable offense. The ins and outs of this are difficult. Is Trump for Ukraine or against Ukraine? What's happening exactly? That's difficult for most voters to grapple with, which of course is why most voters are going to look to trusted sources to help interpret things. And Democrats are going to look to Democratic sources and Republicans are going to look to Republican sources.
Public support for impeaching Trump has risen in recent months. Democrats hope the trend will continue as they prepare to move forward with a vote on articles of impeachment in the House and a trial in the Senate likely early next year. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
This news from VOA Asia. President Donald Trump was noncommittal about signing bipartisan legislation supporting pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong. The U.S. legislation, consisting of two bills, aims to ensure Hong Kong retains enough autonomy to justify favorable U.S. trading terms. It also threatens sanctions for human rights violations. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, the 2020 U.S. presidential election was back in the spotlight last week in Atlanta, Georgia. That's where Democratic presidential contenders gathered for their fifth debate of the primary season. As VOA national correspondent Jim Malone reports from Washington, the impeachment inquiry targeting President Donald Trump was a key focus of the debate.
There were 10 Democrats on stage in Atlanta for the debate sponsored by MSNBC and The Washington Post. All the candidates support the impeachment inquiry now underway in the House, including former Vice President Joe Biden.
Who is most likely to be able to win the nomination in the first place, to win the presidency in the first place? And secondly, who is most likely to increase the number of people who are Democrats in the House and in the Senate?
Biden is one of the front runners in the crowded Democratic field. as is Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren.
We have to establish the principle no one is above the law. We have a constitutional responsibility, and we need to meet it.
Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar supports the impeachment inquiry, but she will also be a juror if there's a trial in the Senate.
What this impeachment proceeding about is really our democracy at stake.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders warned Democrats about focusing too much on Trump.
He is likely the most corrupt president in the modern history of America. But we cannot simply be consumed by Donald Trump. Because if we are, you know what? We're going to lose the election.
Also weighing in was South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Buttigieg has soared into the lead in recent polls in the early voting states of Iowa and New Hampshire.
We are absolutely going to confront this president for his wrongdoing, but we are also each running to be the president who will lead this country after the Trump presidency comes to an end, one way or the other.
California Senator Kamala Harris said she sees a broader theme at work in the Trump impeachment hearings.
There are clearly two different set of rules for two different groups of people in America. The powerful people who, with their arrogance, think they can get away with this, and then everybody else.
Democrats also clashed over competing health care reform proposals, which has become a clear divide between liberals like Warren and Sanders and moderates like Biden, Buttigieg, and Klobuchar. Democrats hold their next debate in December in Los Angeles. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
An emerging and lucrative business has farmers buzzing to cash in on a newly legal cash crop. Experts say the global market may grow at least fivefold by 2025. But as VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, the potential highs for a formerly banned agribusiness have so far come with trying lows.
At this family farm in Michigan, growers have high hopes for what may be the next colossal cash crop.
In 2018, the Farm Bill was passed, which then gave hemp the legs to take off.
Keith Hagen founded Hemp Pure Farm in Michigan with his two brothers in 2019. So far this year, they grew 137 hectares of hemp, the most statewide.
It's invigorating, it's exciting, it's frustrating, it's... At every point of the process, we've probably dealt with every emotion that's been out there.
Hemp and marijuana are both the same plant, cannabis. The difference is the amount of THC, the chemical compound that gives pot smokers a high. Hemp has very little THC, but for 81 years, the U.S. government made no distinction and banned all cannabis.
It's so new and so, not understood from a manufacturing and even farming, perspective. But I think it can be a legitimate part of the U.S. agriculture economy.
The plant's versatility makes it an attractive crop for farmers.
One of the really cool things about hemp is it's has such a wide array of uses. So from hemp concrete to plastics to paper to CBD oil to hemp proteins, bird feed. There's a million different things that it can be used for.
Unlike crops raised for generations, farmers say hemp's recent legalization means a steep learning curve that can come with high reward.
It's a challenging crop to grow, but there is certainly more profit in industrial hemp than there would be traditional rotation crops. And we're going to see greater improvements in technology and methods to help those farmers succeed.
Farmers face challenges like finding buyers for their new crop. Additionally, hemp plants must pass lab certification before harvest. The law bars anything above 0.3% THC. Plants registering above the limit must be destroyed. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can follow us on our newest online accounts, YouTube, Instagram, and VOA Asia Twitter. You can also hear us on the radio. We say hello to everyone listening in Quezon City, the Philippines, on DZUP 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines in Diliman. Thanks so much for joining us today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia Asia team. Ira Melman, Keith Lane, interns Hyung Afra and Candace. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.